This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening, everybody. It's my privilege tonight to bring to you Mike Gravel, former senator, presidential candidate. And I must say, I'm a big fan. Rob Kitzel here tonight, standing in for Rock Cash on the BBS radio network. Please call in on 1-888-429-5471, toll free in the United States and Canada. And if you're outside the United States, please call in on 530-763-1594. At the People Speak here, we try and bring you the most interesting guests available. And I'm very excited tonight to be here with Mike Gravel. Mike, good evening to you, sir.
Okay.
I just want to put it out to you. Your thoughts on politics at the moment, Mike, what do you think is going on here at the moment? I mean, I think to a lot of people that we speak to in the Pow Talk community and other people, People Speak Radio Network, people are very perplexed about what's happening in America, and they feel like they don't really have a voice. What are your thoughts on this as a former presidential candidate?
Well, they don't have a voice. Because the whole process has been corrupted. And I'm not talking about just the legislative process. I'm talking about the administration of the executive with the president in the White House, the judiciary, and, of course, the legislative process. So if you get the corruption of the bureaucracy, then you get the corruption of the legislative process, and you get the corruption of the judiciary, you got a real problem. And that's what we have today in our mature democracy. And I use the word mature in quotes.
I do agree with you, Mike. And I think, this is me paraphrasing, but do you think we are really heading here for an oligarchy? Is that what America has reached now, where uber wealthy people have the voice and the rest of the people are kind of silenced behind corporate lobbyists, K Street individuals?
Yeah, very much so. In fact, but it's been from the very beginning. It's been from the initial structure of our Constitution, which was done by elites for the benefit of elites and has propagated through time. We look upon our time presently as this is the worst time. Well, in a sense, it's not the worst time. It's what we've evolved into in the United States and to a good degree in Europe and the rest of the world. And that is that we have a problem with making governance effective, efficient, and universally equitable. And until we can address those particular problems, it's going to continue to get worse. And you're right, it's going to be run by oligarchs who are going to be living in gated communities, and the people will be continually protesting for more welfareism, because that's what's going to sustain the balance of the people who are not in the gated communities, is welfare and subsidy.
Yeah, I do sense that is very much happening. I think, I don't know if you're familiar with the term, where they talk about dead counties in America.
Where yes.
Well, you are. Yeah.
Well, the whole issue of the parties making deals so that the description of the legislative area is such that it favors one party or the other, and so you don't get real representation. You get party politics at its worst, And this is promulgated throughout our judicial system, which then backs up this distribution. And of course, you have it in Britain also. I mean, you have boroughs that anybody can run in, doesn't have to come from that area, at least as I understand it, and represent what a safe borough for labor or a safe borough for the other conservative parties.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And as you say, it's that famous American word gerrymandered, where this issue comes in, and it's a very interesting situation there where that goes on. And this is where I am a believer that both parties, and I'd like your perspective on this as a former Democrat and senator for the Democratic Party in the United States, your feelings on the almost incestuous relationship between Democrats and Republicans, where they're almost kissing cousins when it comes to a third party or anybody else becoming involved, because their innate opportunism to gain power, if they can't have power, one of the parties, they'd rather a Democrat or a Republican have it. They seem to not want anybody else to get traction or a foothold. Do you really feel that now?
Yes, but you see, that's the nature of power itself. Lord Acton, a Britisher at the turn of the century, coined the phrase "power corrupts" and absolutely, and then what absolutely everybody, not just the president, not just the members of Congress, all the federal judges, all the bureaucrats who wield power are essentially part of a corrupting process. And the only alternative to that corrupting process is to limit the amount of time that a person has power. And you still have the same phenomena occurring within corporations, where the management has the power. They rig it so they can pick the board members, and the board members from other corporations interchange, and they support this obscene rise in the remuneration to the corporate leaders in the United States, and to the remuneration that goes to the financial centers of the United States. And I just happen to have a daughter who's in the financial area, and she knows, and we both agree, that she is far better rewarded than would be a teacher, and I mean by far, by thousands of percent. And so yet the teacher in our society is vital if our society has any hope of being egalitarian.
Now, Mike, that's interesting that you should say that as well. Is there any chance of your children? I know you have. Do you have a son and a daughter?
Yes.
Any chance that they will follow in your footsteps and pick up the political baton, so to speak?
No, not at all. they're up close and personal. They saw me go through the midlife crisis of it all. No, they're flattered by the amount of attention that I receive, and particularly in old age. But no, they have no desire to pursue that. My daughter, maybe to a degree, but she's a single parent with two daughters, and she's got to pay attention to her economic status. And I don't have anything of substance for them to inherit. So they've got to watch their own P's and Q's.
I understand. Do you think also that we lose a lot of quality individuals that may otherwise enter politics because of the scrutiny that happens now? And do you think it's either scrutiny that prevents people coming into politics, or the fact that they have to constantly, and to coin an English phrase here, which is a little bit gruff, they always have to be on the ponts, so to speak. You've always got your hand out for money for the next election campaign.
Yeah.
And I think that must be extremely difficult to do. And who wants to do that, Mike? I mean, that's that. Was it
it's
tougher
demeaning,
now
it,
than in your
I'll
day?
You,
I mean,
it's
that's
an embarrassment.
My
in fact, I always equated it when I was in office of going around with a tin cup with some coins in the bottom and shaking my tin cup so that people would put coins in my cup. It's a terrible process, and it's one of the more subtle and more universal forms of corruption. In fact, I was just reading an article about that by Fukuyama in the Foreign Affairs, which has a great treatment of this whole subject that we're talking about, of what's wrong with the nature of governance and comparing it to governance in other countries. And so you're quite right. You spend all your time raising money, and to coin the phrase more crudely than you did, kissing ass, so to speak, so that you can get the money. And then when you get yourself into that position, there's a sort of a moral code that's totally trashed. And that is that people that donate to my campaign, when they have an issue that comes across my legislative horizon, they expect me to react in a favorable manner towards their special interest. And, of course, that's exactly what happens in the states. And it's even made worse by the fact that in the House of Representatives, and to a degree in the Senate, the House of Representatives, there's 435, and you can add 100 for the Senate, so there's 535 competing interests. In my case, I came from Alaska, represented Alaska. Oil was a major, major employer in the state and accounted for a good deal of Alaska's wealth. But in addition to oil, there was timber, there was mining, there was fisheries, tourism. These are all areas that I was extremely sensitive to and had to be if I was going to maintain myself in office. And of course, I lasted 12 years, which in my mind is long enough.
I do agree with you, and I'd like to get your feelings on term limits. I just need to announce that we are on the BBS radio network, The People Speak. For people that would like to call in with questions for former Senator Mike Gravel and presidential candidate, the number is toll-free 888-429-5471. That's for people in the United States and Canada. And for those overseas, please call in on 530-763-1594. Now, we have a quick question from Mike in California, and he's asking Senator Gravel if he has any viable picks for presidential candidates for 2016, of course, unless you're going to run yourself, Mike says.
No, I'm not going to run. I'm 84 years old at this point, and I'm on a downhill drag to the end of the tunnel. But, I do have my favorite, and I've got to tell you that I think Hillary, who I view as a warmonger and would be a terrible president, and, of course, you've got to keep in mind that for the Clintons, they'd done very well. They were broke and penniless when they went into politics, and now they have a net worth around $100 million. So you can say politics has really done well by them. But there's another person, and I think if people are focused on trying to get a woman elected president, and they make the mistake of thinking that a woman is going to be less bellicose than a man. Well, Hillary disproves that. Indira Gandhi disproves that. Golda Meir disproves that. So no, a woman is really no different in public office than a man, from my experience. And the woman that I favor, and I'm sure she'll run, and that is Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, the senator from Massachusetts. She has taken charge of what I consider to be the issue of the age, and that is the inequality that exists between the haves and the have-nots. And that can go from an economic point of view, from a food point of view, from a water point of view, from a geographic point of view. She owns that issue and articulates it better than anybody else. And from what I observe in the way she's conducting herself, she is doing it very professionally. She does not give in to interviews, certainly not on the fly, because that's when politicians make mistakes. She recognizes her own inexperience, but she's got a hell of a lot more experience than Obama ever had when he took over the presidency. And it's a real canard to say you got to have all this experience. What you got to have is an understanding of the problem that people face and the courage to try to implement a solution to addressing that problem. And from my point of view, Elizabeth Warren meets that criteria and then some.
Well, that's excellent, Mike. Good. That's a great thought. We have a call now coming in, and Don's going to pipe him in. This is Rock Cash calling in on line two with a question for Mike Gravel.
Hello, Mike. Good evening. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you.
Can you, in a sense, identify these people that, as you stated, you have to kiss ass in order to make it in politics? And how can we do away with these people? How can we do away with these corrupt politicians?
Well, I don't think you can, because of the structure of our society. Representative government means just that. You elect a representative to look out for your interests. But that representative, in order to present himself to you in a constituency, has to raise money to pay for the cost of the campaign. So where does he raise the money from? It doesn't come from the ordinary citizen, by and large. It comes from a special interest who, like in let's say in Alaska, where I just earlier defined the economic interest of the state, well, some of the money is going to come from oil. Some of the money is going to come from timber. Some is going to come from tourism. Some is going to come from mining. You name it. These areas are totally organized within the state. And if you don't meet their criteria, forget the contribution, because they assume you're going to meet the criteria. And if you don't meet the criteria, you don't get reelected the next time around. So there's a compromise from the get-go of your principles, or supposedly, and of course, that's one of the reasons I didn't last. You know, I slowly alienated every constituency that I had by being so independent, and of course, the result of that was I only lasted for two terms. I think that was more than enough. Historically, what you find is that, by and large, the great work that's done in the Senate by new people getting there is in the first term. In the first half of the first term, because they come in with their idealism fresh, they want to change the world, they want to do things, and then all of a sudden they get a breakthrough and get some of it done. And then after the second term is get reelected, don't rock the boat, and just take care of the special interests that take care of you.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid.
So there's no way of getting around it.
Not under the present structure, and this isn't just the United States now. Now this is the whole structure of representative government, which is flawed in that regard. And the only way to correct it is to remove the monopoly that representative government has over human governance and bring the people directly into the process. There's only two venues for change. That's the government where the problem exists, whether it's in the U.S. or in other countries. Or the people. The people, the government has the power to bring about change, but they don't, because it would destabilize what they have already. And the people don't have the procedures. Now, we do have in the United States, and it's at the state level, and it's very imperfectly done, where we have the initiative where people can make laws. I feel that the people should be able to make laws throughout the United States and throughout the world, in partnership with representative government. It would clean up representative government, and it would bring the people into a constituency of acting where they have more wisdom and more knowledge and the ability to accomplish things that cannot be done in representative government. Now, all I've done is I've written a piece of legislation to bring that about. but it would take millions of dollars to make this known to the American people so they could vote for it. And we have a voting process that circumvents the government to bring this about. But at my age, I'm totally discouraged. I do have some new group of people that are interested in this, but I don't have the energy at this point in time. I can write and do a lot of reading and analysis, but I don't have the energy to pursue it as I did for the last 25 years in getting this legislation codified.
Now, Mike, is it possible, is Rock still on the line, Don, or is he gone?
I'm here if you need me.
Okay. I was just going to quickly ask Mike on this, Rock, and I think you'd probably like to hear his comments on this. Of Mike, is it possible that you could give this new generation of politicians a similar playbook that you had to defund these wars? Like
no,
you worked
no,
on
no,
defunding
no,
the, you know, the
no,
Vietnam War. Is
yeah.
that possible any longer, or
no,
is the military-industrial
no
complex just
no.
too strong?
I wish I could. I don't think there's a playbook that I or anybody else could put forward that would really change the structure of representative government that we see. And the playbook that I do have, which is the National Citizens Initiative, where I suggest that the answer is for the people to be able to make laws directly and policies, that I know that's not a magic open sesame. It releases the genie of the people, but keep in mind, the people will make mistakes with this new power, but they won't make as many mistakes as what we've seen with representative government through our history. And then you get the question, well, if the majority of the people are going to make these decisions on laws, who's going to control them? Well, of course, there's no control of the majority. It is what it is. And people can be suspicious of that. I'm not. If you provide the necessary procedures for the people to act in a deliberative fashion, then the people will conduct themselves that way. But you hear this charge, oh, you're going to have mob rule. Well, we don't have mob rule in the United States, except in the Congress. And one example is when they passed the Patriot Act, where nobody read it, 340 pages long, and one guy claims to be the sponsor of it, Sensenbrenner. Well, I got to tell you, I don't think he's read it either, because now he's horrified with what's being done under the guise of the Patriot Act. So I come back to the point that I'm making, trying to make, and that is that the solution, the direction that we have to go into is not with government, and that's where all the progressives and the idealists are there, that, oh, what we can do is we can elect some people. Like I said earlier that I would vote for and hope Elizabeth Warren runs. I'm under no delusion that the best she'll be able to do is to give Wall Street a hard time. But what runs our country, the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative body, and our foreign policy, is Wall Street and the military-industrial complex and AIPAC. So that's it. They run the country. And so if you think you can overcome, first off, you cannot get elected in confrontation with them. And that's where my hope with Elizabeth Warren, she's in confrontation with Wall Street. Can she get elected? I hope and pray, but here she's got to keep her powder dry in the military-industrial complex, because that's a union of forces that's unbeatable, as we found out with the Clintons, with the Bushes, and with Ronald Reagan and all the others. So all we can do is hope that she can get elected. She may realize that what I'm talking about, which is to be able to permit people to make laws, she could go over the head of the Congress and introduce initiatives that the people could act on directly, that the Congress would not be able to touch with a 10-foot pole.
I think that's a very valid point there, Mike. And here's one other I want to throw at you. With your connection with basically publishing the Pentagon Papers and putting them into the record, what's your thoughts on what Edward Snowden has done Is he the next Daniel Ellsberg, or is he something different? What are your thoughts on him, Mike?
He's better. Both Dan and I agree that he's better than Daniel Ellsberg. I mean, thank God for Edward Snowden and Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, and the tragedy of Chelsea Clinton getting 35 years incarcerated. That's an absolute tragedy. The people who should have been convicted were the people that were giving false information to the people and the government higher-ups on the reports that Manning released. He was releasing information that was at variance with what was national policy. And the people that should be incarcerated or prosecuted are those that were breaking the law wantonly. And you see it now with the Obama administration, breaking the law wantonly for good and for bad, both. There's just no limit. And you'd get the Obama administration, the reason why they want to get their hands on Snowden is to put him in jail for 50 years, not 35 years. And the same thing with Julian Assange. And that's the tragedy. The only thing that maintains our democracy or the semblance of a democracy is that it leaks like a sieve. But they've been trying to plug all the holes of the sieve, and this is primarily being done by Barack Obama.
So, Mike, what do you think would happen to Edward Snowden if he would be foolish enough to jump on a plane and head back to the United States?
Yeah,
what do you think would happen to him?
First off, what would happen to him? He's not that foolish. He's bright. He understood what had happened to Manning and to Assange, and so what he did is he tried to give himself some cover. It was thought out to a degree, but not thought out enough, because he accidentally wound up in Russia, and thank God for Putin being at variance with American leadership that saw it in his interest to embarrass the United States by giving him asylum. And now that asylum has been extended for 3 years. I would like a country like Switzerland, which the people can put forth a piece of legislation, and there has been talk of it in Switzerland, to put forth an initiative to have the people of Switzerland to invite Snowden to come and live in Switzerland and be protected by Swiss laws. Now he's being protected by Russian law, and that says something as to what's going on between Putin and Obama today.
Yeah, that has to be a little perplexing, doesn't it, when Russia are providing freedoms. Anyway, at that moment, I'm going to take a brief break here. Our engineer, Don, is going to play some brief messages. You're listening to The People Speak Radio on BBS Radio Network. Please call in on 888-429-5471. That's toll-free for our people in the United States and Canada. And for our international listeners, it's 530-763-1594. I'm Rob Kitzel here, filling in for Rock Cash on the People Speak Radio Network, and we're privileged to have Senator Mike Gravel with us for the whole hour. Over to you, Don.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to VBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to the People Speak Radio Network. I'm your host, filling in for Rock Cash, Rob Kitzel, BBS Radio Network. Please call in with your questions. It's a great opportunity to reach Senator Mike Gravel, former presidential candidate. Please call in on 888-429-5471. That's toll-free for the people in the United States and Canada. And for our overseas listeners, please call in on 530-763-1594. Remember, People Speak Radio every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Anyway, we're back with Mike Gravel, and I think Don had asked him a question in the break. I don't know. Do you want to reiterate that, Don, so that Mike can answer it on the air now live? I think it was a very interesting question. I think Mike's going to have a very interesting answer.
Certainly, I can do that for you. My question was, are they turning Manning into a girl against his will? Because to me, that just seems part and parcel for what's going on in government today and the military and the way it's all portrayed. And here's this poor sod that, you know, I keep thinking, gosh, he's being turned into a female against his will, and I don't know whether to feel sorry for him or not. And other people, you know, they discuss it with me. I hate to tell you, I mean, it's made me chuckle a bit because I really don't know what to make of the whole situation, and I really wanted your take on it. And
well,
so
let me address that. Clearly, what's going on with respect to Bradley turning into Chelsea, and I used the word Chelsea Manning when I referred to him, because that's the Manning's choice, that he wants to be a woman or be identified as a woman. Now, clearly this is not of recent vintage with the military, because this kind of an issue goes back to childhood. And so I'm not a psychologist. I'm not that familiar with Bradley Manning, but I do remember this, that when he was first arrested, and they put him in solitary confinement and tortured him to a degree, what they said is, oh, he's unstable. Now, stop and think about it. Somebody who has the, keep in mind, now, Manning was 22 years old when he made this decision. Now, here's a person that had to understand that his oath of office was not an oath to the captains and generals and the president and the Congress. His oath of office was as a individual who swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States from foreign and domestic threats. And what he was doing in releasing this information was actually addressing the domestic threat that we have within our intelligence community and within the military. And as a result of that, it was that same military that sought his prosecution, and he was, well, they should have been prosecuting the people who information Manning released about their wrongdoing. That's who should be prosecuted. So it's the same old story. Those in power tend to punish the messengers rather than address the message. Now, with respect to his identity crisis, this is something that we're all maturing as a society with respect to lesbians, with gays, with transgender, which he would fall into. This is something we've matured to and understand. Now that the military would address this issue for him, is the only good sign of what's happened to Bradley Manning. If he wants to be a girl, he's got every right to seek that identity. And obviously, he's more comfortable as a woman than as a man. And so we should honor that. And I know it brings a chuckle to people's minds, but it brings a chuckle because of our own immaturity, unfortunately, that we don't have enough respect for individuals and the choices they choose to make in life.
Thank you. Really, I do. I thank you for the answer very much. And yeah, I was only chuckling because I couldn't get it out of my head that I thought the military is turning him into something against his will. And
oh,
to
no,
me, that was
contrary.
So absurd, my mind just chuckled on it, like to think,
yeah,
gee,
no,
you
I appreciate
gotta be kidding
that.
Me.
I chuckled when the military, when he was first incarcerated, were saying, well, he's unstable. What they're talking about, he's unstable with respect to his sexual identity.
Right.
For the military,
you.
That's unstable. There's yep. nothing unstable about that. That's a search we all have within ourselves. So, no, the chuckle is the goddamn military that was the way they pursued this whole case. That they, in a essentially a secret trial. I mean, this is under the Obama administration, which is par for the course.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for answering my question. And, Rob, appreciate you allowing me on the air. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Don. Anyway, I think that's a very enlightening answer, actually, there. And it probably brings me to answer you, another question about you when you, I think you're what would be termed, Mike, and, you know, I think you may be a reformed Catholic, and you're speaking to a complete militant atheist here. And
well,
I know you're
Yeah,
I know you're involved with the UU Church and do a lot of good works. And I think that, is it pressure from the religious groups that are causing these sorts of issues and causing so much trauma to people who are in a situation like Chelsea Manning? To me, it's extremely perplexing that these people have this much power and are able to basically put draconian measures on other people due to the fact that they believe their religious sky friend is more powerful than anybody else. But when you look at Congress, and as we talk about, how many atheists are in Congress at the moment? Well, we used to have one from California, where I live. Now I don't think we have any.
Well, who was that from California?
I think it was some guy down in Orange County, and that was a number of years ago. But obviously he got kicked off because he obviously upset some people. So I forget his name, but yeah, I know it wasn't Duncan Hunter.
No, you have to have a religion to get into Congress or run for public office. And of course, I picked Unitarianism, which is the closest I can find to no belief at all. And so, you know, I see where religion can do some good, but I see where religion does a terrible, terrible harm through the course of civilization. And now we see that with the jihadists who base their hatred and their violence on the Quran and their interpretation of it. We have the same thing going on in the Bible, which was used to sustain slavery. There's just no end to what people will do with religion in order to oppress their fellow man.
I agree, and it is the ultimate control mechanism, and in the hands of dastardly people, you will end up with dastardly results, and sadly, that's what's happening. We need to get on to another caller now. We have on line three, Bud, who actually is a friend of mine, and he's calling us from Pennsylvania, and I think Don can put Bud through to Mike Gravel. Over to you, Bud.
Good day, Senator. Good to talk with you.
Hi, Bud.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
all
I can.
Right, you can hear me.
You got a nice deep voice. Are you a singer?
I call myself Budhead. I chose that name in 1997 after California had voted the Compassionate Use Act in by a 2-to-1 margin and started the real marijuana revolution in the country. Right, or made the first legislative step in it, right?
Yep.
And since then, and since well before then, I've been a 40-year marijuana advocate and talked to an awful lot of old people who used to grow industrial hemp and such profit was there. As this year closes and we vote in November, many state ballots will have initiatives on it to legalize medical marijuana. Hopefully some of them will have recreational marijuana also, and also industrial hemp. And as the country transforms from illegal marijuana, illegal cannabis, to newly revitalized legal cannabis, right, do you see the country changing? Do you see that actually happening?
I sure do. Let me tell you an interesting vignette. You know, when I left office, I was so controversial. There's nobody that asked me to be on their board of directors, you know. That just never happened. But about 3 years ago, a friend of mine in California who's very much, in fact, has developed a strain that is being patented, he formed a corporation, asked me if I would serve on the board along with the former governor of New Mexico. And I said I would. And so that's the only board I serve on other than my nonprofit organizations. But let me address the whole issue. All of my political career, I've been very much supportive of the deregulation or the prohibition against marijuana. I think that marijuana is no different than tobacco in that regard. In fact, better from a health point of view. But let's take it one step further. I think the whole war on drugs is an abomination and is a cruel hoax on civilization. We should have learned from prohibition of alcohol in the 20s. All it did was create criminality, and you didn't change the habits of people. And so what I feel is that with respect to all drugs, they should be decriminalized. If people have a heroin problem or a morphine problem, let them go to a doctor and be treated for that. We have great success in three countries that I know of, Switzerland, the Netherlands, and believe it or not, Portugal, which has decriminalized all drugs. And where people can go, if they have an addiction, they can go get their prescriptions to get the amount of drug that they need to sustain themselves. And then they have a creative life rather than a criminalized life. The problem with drugs, it's a public health problem. It's not a criminal problem. And we've dealt with it with criminal force. And as a result of that, we spent $1 trillion wastefully. We have destabilized our judicial system, increased our level of incarceration, where we are the embarrassment of the world, and we still haven't... Mexico is trying to deal with the problem, and they want us to decriminalize drugs. And that would solve all of the problems we have with the whole drug criminalization issue. But are we... This just goes to show you how literally silly, and that's the word I use. They could say they're stupid. They're not stupid. They're intelligent, but they're ignorant of solutions that they don't want to take or don't understand. And that would be solving the problem. And here again, there's a lot of religious factors involved where the conservative right is very much for the criminalization of drugs. And society has paid a dear, dear price. And this all began under Richard Nixon's presidency. In fact, Nixon appointed a presidential commission headed up by Governor Schaefer of Pennsylvania to look into marijuana. And that report found, now we're talking about early 70s, that report found that marijuana was not a gateway to harsher drugs. And, of course, this is not the answer that Nixon wanted. And, of course, he was under the Swami effect of that very famous preacher at the time, Billy Graham. And as a result of that, he trashed the report and began the war on drugs that we suffer under today.
I remember that report. I do remember that report, and he trashed all.
It's just terrible. It's just terrible. We penalize people for no reason at all. It's like penalizing people for buying cigarettes. Well, we do by increasing the tax on it, but I've got no problems with that. If you want to pay for it, you got it. But we found that in the states that have the state of Oregon, the state of Washington and Colorado, they're very surprised at the revenue that's come in as a result of legalizing recreational use of marijuana.
Well, $50 million extra into the city of Denver.
Yeah.
Unexpected windfall.
Well, it's not unexpected. If you just analyze it, you can figure that out. It's the problem. What's unexpected is the level of ignorance we have in higher office.
Well, I think that's a great answer, and I think Bud probably loved that answer, Mike. I think you've made his day. That's super. Anyway, we have a new caller in. We have Steve calling in from Omaha on line two. Over to Steve on line two.
Thank you, Mr. Gravel.
Yes.
I heard that you were going to be on the show, and I did a little Googling, and I thought, aha, I got an aha moment, UFOs. And I thought, oh, I'm going to
hand
this guy a UFO.
Good, okay, go ahead, ask me about that.
After watching several hours of the hearings on YouTube, the citizens, the hearings on disclosure, I can't shame you. I cannot do the aha moment. I've been spoiled. So, what is the status on these the results from the hearings? They were in 2013, and I was amazed. I was really impressed with.
They were really something, and I was impressed too. To get a number of people to focus that much attention for that period of time, a whole week, I thought was very edifying. Steve Bassett's the guy that really made all that possible. He's trying to get the Congress to hold a hearing. I've advised him against that. I think that there's not a prayer that Congress would do what these former members of Congress did. And I think that the answer is to focus on the United Nations, which created a commission. It hasn't funded its activities, and that's what should be focused on, is even if you have to get money from private sources to fund this commission so that they collect data worldwide. I have a very simplistic view of the situation. That is that I think it's the height of arrogance of human beings to think that we are the only sentient beings in the cosmos. I think that's arrogant beyond belief. And so, under that umbrella, there's a lot of room for belief and disbelief.
Thank you for answering the question. You're a great American.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for asking that question, Steve from Omaha. We have a question now that I think Mike may like. This is from Donald from California. He says, Mr. Gravel, if you had to propose just one amendment to the Constitution, what would that be, Mike? You tell us, what would that be?
That would be the amendment that I have already drafted, and you can see it on my website or the National Citizens Initiative. That's an amendment to empower people to be able to make laws in every government jurisdiction of the United States, and I would hope make laws in every jurisdiction of all nations. In addition to empowering the people to make laws, it sets up, and this is what's crucial and what doesn't exist anywhere in the world, including Switzerland, it sets up an agency which administers the procedures on behalf of the people, thereby making the people's legislative role independent of representative government. And without that independence, what you have today at the state level is a lot of pushback from representative government to thwart the ability of the people to make laws. And for the people to make proper laws, you need a deliberative process, which means you need procedures to do it, and procedures that are very uniform throughout the legislative world. And so this isn't rocket science-y. And so what is rocket science-y in a sense is the belief that you can go around the government and vote directly on this legislation without the government having a word to say. And it's very simple. That's how our government was created, with Article 7 of the Constitution, where it said that when the conventions of nine states vote to ratify it, it becomes the law of those nine states. That was in violation of the existing law of the Confederacy, which required to have unanimous consent. Now, what we can do is we don't have to go to conventions. We don't have to go to the Congress. We have the technology to ask the people, do you want to be empowered to make laws and act independently of representative government in so doing? And that you want to limit the money that goes into that lawmaking process to that of a natural person. Those are the elements that are in the resolution, the constitutional amendment that I have prepared. And hopefully, if we can get enough people of substance to raise money, I had given up that I would live to see it. But who knows if these people that are now have an interest in pursuing this can raise the money to begin to the campaign, and that's what it will take. It will take the cost of a presidential election, several hundred million dollars, to bring this before the people, to get them to vote with total transparency, and this would have nothing to do with the government. You could just go around the people just the way you went around the government in 1787, 88, and 89, which was at that time a confederation of 13 states.
Well, just one caveat to that, Mike. Do you think we could get direct democracy if the people would stand up and say, we're prepared to finance all our elections? And I've had an idea here where we've thrown this around in some chat rooms, and they've said, well, corporations are people too. So I've said...
Well, if corporations pass a law against that.
Well, I've got a way around that, Mike, and I'd like you to stand up and say this because you carry a lot more weight than I ever will. Let them be people. Give them a passport. Give these corporations a passport, and guess what the passport will give them? It will give them the right to pay American tax wherever they are in the world. So let them be people. I'm for
I would oppose that. I think that, first off, corporations are artificial people. They don't vote. They don't eat. They don't sleep. They have no memory. They have no morality. No, I would be against that. But let me point out to you what you're suggesting, and which is what a great many good people suggest. They suggest a solution within the context of representative government. That will not happen, in my judgment, in my judgment, of the years that I, the 25 years I spent fighting this problem, having been an elected official, I got to tell you that there's no way that representative government will make the necessary changes to dilute its power and make the corrections that we need to be made. They have to be done directly by the people. And the first step is not the details of this. The first step is to just to give the people the power to make laws in a deliberative fashion. After that, Katie, bar the door. They'll do what's right. We don't need to do anything more than that. Give them the tools.
Well, I think that's a fabulous part to end on. I would like to thank our guest, Mike Gravel. I think he answered some fabulous questions tonight. I would love for Mike to come back. I know Don would like him to come back. I know Mike, the producer, would like him to come back. And
I'll be happy to come back at some future time, okay?
A big thank you to you, Mike, and thank you for your, all you've done. And there you go. We had Mike Gravel on tonight. Thank you for listening to the People Speak Radio Network, BBS Radio. And we'll all see you next week with, I think Rock has a great guest on next weekend who, I think it's Albert Stubblebine. So thank you again to our guest, Senator Mike Gravel.
In the shadow of the stable by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.